Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It's another Desert Island Goals, and it's John Gibbons hosting this time. And I'm delighted to be joined in our studio by the CEO of Liverpool Football Club, Peter Moore. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, John. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks very much for coming down, braving the weather outside.
Yeah, it's as we said, it's not Madrid anymore. Come back. No, it's... And we're going to get this for the next week, but you know what? It's Liverpool. It's got a lot better things going on for it than the weather.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about sort of your love affair, if you like, with Liverpool Football Club, because it's not something you get to do too much. No. I will guess, you know, it's business and it's today and it's what are Liverpool doing tomorrow, where it's right. Nice kind of like look back and how it all started for you, because how it all started for you was how it all started for most of us, really, which is, you know, as a young boy supporting the boys in red.
Yeah, exactly. Lads and dads. And as I've famously said many times now, my first game was November 1959. My dad took me to Anfield. We played Leighton Orient. We beat Leighton Orient 4-3. This is pre-Shankly. Phil Taylor was still the manager. Shankly came actually the month after. And of course, we were languishing in the second division. We were a mediocre second division team. And the other team in Liverpool were the dominant Division One team. So... but I'll never forget that day. I was only 4 years of age, but I can still sense and feel and stay with my dad. I think we were on the paddock. I was too small to go in the boys' pen. And he was not one for sitting in the stands. And you couldn't get stands tickets anyway. So yeah, Leighton Orient 3, Liverpool 4. And I was smitten from that moment on.
I mean, the first goal you picked 3 goals for us, as everyone does. And your first goal is sort of quite young in your life as well.
Yeah.
It's Ian St John's goal in the FA Cup final, 1965. So you would have been about 10, I think.
10 years of age, yeah.
So first of all, I think it's worth sort of reminding people or maybe for people who don't know, just describing how big it was for Liverpool to win the FA Cup, because they hadn't won it up to that point. And I gather it was something of an obsession, I guess.
It was, you know, if I recall, we played twice in the FA Cup final, 1914 and maybe 1950. And lost,
50, yeah.
Yeah, lost both times. And so, and, you know, the FA Cup then, and it's we can talk about the FA Cup now, obviously, but the FA Cup then was just this momentous weekend away, and I was too young to go. And for those of you who were too young to remember that it was black and white, and it was the only football game you saw on television during the year. Everything else was blacked out. And so the anticipation for the FA Cup final was monstrous. Royal Marine Marching Band would be there before the kickoff. And for us as Liverpool fans, this was almost the holy grail of that period of time. And it was that great team of Roger Hunt, Ian Callaghan, St. John, Jerry Byrne famously broke his collarbone but played on in the final. Went to extra time, and I can still see this majestic diving header from the Saint. Cali goes down the right wing, pings it over. Wasn't a great cross because it was a little bit behind St. John, but he somehow managed to arc his body to get it in past Gary Sprake. And we all went ballistic. It was just one of those great days because we'd won the league the previous year. So it wasn't quite the double, but it was relatively close. And that really set us off on to where we are today, winning that trophy, bringing it home to Liverpool, it was the days of St. George's Hall and Town Hall and maybe going up and down Castle Street, if I remember rightly. And we had a lot more of those parades ever since. So, yeah, I always remember that.
And where did you watch it?
At home. By then, I had moved just a couple of years earlier to, my dad had moved, has got a pub in North Wales, because the pub we had in Garston on Speke Road, we'd moved away from that kind of a, if you, I pass it every day when I go to the airport and remind my wife, who's sick of it now, that that's where I grew up. It's now the Budget Tire Depot.
But the
The building is exactly the same. It's the Gay Cavalier. It was a Bent's Brewery pub, and that's what my dad, and that's kind of where I grew up a little bit. But the tenements were still there. Those of the listeners who remember Speke Road Gardens, it was kind of rough. And my dad got a great opportunity to get a pub between Wrexham and Chester. And so I will have moved there, the Red Lion in Marford, top of Marford Hill, right on the Chester Road. And I will have watched it with my dad in the pub on probably, and I'm not exaggerating, a 13-inch black and white television. And I'm no exaggeration there.
I want to talk to you about a few of those players that you've mentioned, because I think they're worth sort of eulogising on a little bit more. And the first one is Ian Callaghan, who you mentioned puts that cross in. He, for some people, again, listening to this, he's just a statistic. Everyone knows that he's Liverpool's greatest appearance holder. Might be forever. That might be a record that's never beaten, because it's an extraordinary number, isn't it? And just shows that how he managed to sort of reinvent himself, how he managed to come through different periods. Because you mentioned there that, you know, that where we were, you know, when we went in your first game, he comes right through that, and more. He must have been an extraordinary player to achieve that.
Well, 870 games, I think. Yeah, nobody's going to, in today's world, nobody's going to play, you know, nearly 900 games for a singular club. Squad rotation and everything that goes on now. And for me, because I have the honour of seeing him on a regular basis, and it's different for me. And then people go, oh, it's Cali. And I go, this is Ian Cali, right? And so when I'm with him, which is a lot, because he's still very involved with the club, still works match days and loves it. And I say, Cali, you know, because he's, I think it was his birthday, I think, last week, 77 years of age. He said, I love being around the club. I love being relevant. I love talking to young fans who have no idea who I am. But this club means so much to me. And he tells great stories about catching the bus to play with his boots and people letting him go to the front of the line at the bus stop because they knew he was playing that afternoon. What a player and what a team that was. You know, Callaghan on one wing, Peter Thompson on the other, Steve Highway a little later on, obviously. Yeah. But Roger Hunt, St. John, Willie Stevenson, you know, Ron Yates, obviously, Tommy Lawrence. That was the team. If you can say what team is the platform by which, as we sit here today, we're enjoying Liverpool, champions of the world, champions of Europe, and hopefully one of these days, champions of England, that was the team that was the basis for it. And those 11 players, which we can all name if you're people of a certain age like I am, are still the foundation of that of our football club today.
And it's an interesting game because it's 2-1, but all the games come in extra time, and all the goals, sorry, come in extra time. And the first goal is scored by Roger Hunter. You mentioned there that the copy's called Sir Roger.
Sir Roger. I still, again, Roger will show up, and it's me. And across the room, so you can recognize the first time I came to the club, I think 2017, the Player Awards, and there was Roger Hunt at my table, and I was in awe. Still got that great hair, you know, that clean cut look with his wife. Who's absolutely delightful. And, you know, he's getting on, he's a little older than he is, 80. But still, you can engage with him, you can talk about games, sharp as a tack. And from that perspective, I think these are the people, the Roger Hunts of this world, Ron Yates, you know, obviously we've lost recently, Peter Thompson's gone, Tommy Smith is gone, Tommy Lawrence is gone. And we're starting to see this passing of a generation, which is sad to me. But still having Roger with us, still having the Saint with us, still having Cali with us. These are huge players for me as a football fan, as a Liverpool fan, that are the basis, again, of what this club is built upon.
And so it's important for you that these guys always feel welcome at Liverpool, always feel like they can come, and it's their club as kind of much as anyone's, really.
Yeah, I mean, they on a game day, we've got about 20, 25 players that are wandering around the lounges and talking to fans, and they love it. You know, and they, Bruce Grobler, Phil Neal, David Fairclough, David Johnson, Terry McDermott, you see them all in the lounges talking, engaging, telling stories. And I think it sets us apart as a football club. of the types of players that we can. You know, in the boardroom, Kenny will be there, Rushy will be there. Phil Thompson comes up all the time whenever he possibly can. And I was in Madrid, as we both were, and bumped into Luis Garcia. And, you know, you talk to these former players who have either passed through here or have had a great length of their career here. But to a man, Sammy Hoopy is the same. I'm a Red. You know, there's something about this football club that once you've donned that shirt and you've run out onto that pitch, that no matter who you play for in your career, and Luis Garcia is a great example, Xabi Alonso, great examples, they've all played for big clubs other than us, but they're Reds. There's something, the essence of what Liverpool is about is captured forever in their hearts, and they come back, and we're looking forward next month to the Legends game, and El Nino's coming back, Fernando Torres, and he was at the Atletico game, and I didn't get to talk to him, but everybody says he's training, and he couldn't be more excited to put a Liverpool shirt on, particularly play Barcelona, as you might imagine. So yeah, that's such an important part, you know, of our history.
And just to sort of finish up on the game again specifically before we move on to your next pick, I was thinking before about, obviously we're all hopeful of a league title this year after a long wait, and I'm thinking about what the outpouring of emotion might be like, you know, if and when we do it. And it must have been a similar thing in 1965 in terms of that FA Cup. It must have felt like, you were only 10 years old, but I'm sure there was other people, you know, your dad would say, you know, are we ever going to win this? Is it, you know, how long is it going to be? And then, so when it was done, it must have, you know, you must have been seeing so much kind of emotion from Liverpool fans.
It was euphoric. And remember, these are the days of you know, the beginning of Anfield South, right, where you're not just going to Wembley for the game. You'd have a great weekend down there. These are the days still of men going to the game in a shirt and tie at times. These are the days of red and white knitted scarves, rosettes and rattles. And in my office, and I know you've been in, if you look on the wall, I've got a rattle from the FA Cup final 1965, a classic red rattle, hand-painted FA Cup 1965 that's framed up on my wall. And as a kid, that's what you donned. You had your red rosette, red and white rosette. You had a classic red and white knitted scarf your mum knitted, because you couldn't buy them. And then you to make noise, you'd have your rattle. And we were up for the cup was an expression that was always used. Theoretically, you were going down for the cup, but it was something that was so special there. Just wish it was in colour. And there's colourised versions of it, but, you know, that was when, you know, only a couple of years in, we started wearing all red, you know. And to me, that FA Cup final, and Leeds, of course, wearing all white, right? So it's just, there was something glorious about that. Shankly leading out the team in the days when the manager would take that long walk at the head of his team. And I assume it was probably Don Revie for Leeds.
That time, yeah.
Yeah. And there's also a famous photograph of Ron Yates and Bobby Collins at the coin toss. And Yates, like, look, Bobby Collins up to Ron's tummy. So all of those memories come together. But that was a seminal moment in our club's history, because it felt like now we've won something big. The FA Cup then was absolutely monstrous, you know, and to do the double-ish was huge.
Yeah, my dad still got his knit scarf, funny enough. It's so long. It's really huge.
But your mum or your nana would do it.
His nan did his. And it's so long, and it was heavy as well.
Yeah, and God forbid it got wet. Yeah, exactly. So, and now, of course, I mean, I'm looking at dozens of scarves over there, but now they're dime a dozen. But there's nothing better than a classic red and white knitted scarf.
Okay, we will move on. Your second goal is another classic. It's another one that's steeped in Liverpool's history. It's Terry McDermott against Spurs over in 1977. It's a famous performance and a famous goal, because, you know, when you speak to people of a certain generation, again, you say the all-time best Liverpool performances of all time. Liverpool 7, Spurs 0 is always right up there. That was a really good Spurs side. A few superstars they just signed as well, but they got a hammer in that day at Anfield.
It was that goal for me. If anybody says, could you show me the quintessential Liverpool goal? That's the goal I'll show them. If you look back, and everybody remembers, obviously, the Terry Mac header, then people will dissect it to Stevie Highway hitting it first time off the left. The David Johnson pass, you know, in the day, this is not Deso pitches with superb balls. This is David Johnson pinging this thing with the outside of his right foot into Steve's path with the weight and just the slight curl, like Trent does today, that allowed Highway just to run on seamlessly without breaking stride. glancing to his right, seeing Terry Mack, not the most prolific header of the ball, but basically just nailing that first thing to the back post. And I'm assuming Pat Jennings was probably in goal for Spurs. And you're right, this was a tremendous Spurs team. But that, to me, is the quintessential Liverpool goal. Bang, bang, pass and move. Just pace out of the back. We look at the way we break nowadays. You look at Alisson to Mo in the last minute against Manchester United. Well, we used to do that in the mid-70s at speed as well. And the playing conditions, because this goal was late in the season, playing conditions were nothing like they got today. But that goal, for me, when somebody says, show me the quintessential Liverpool Football Club goal, that's the goal I'll show them.
I mean, I used to watch, you know, these teams on videos, and what used to, you know, used to stand out for me when I think about the relentlessness of these teams, because this is the seventh goal in a game where I think most sides would have just been passing it around amongst themselves by then. But Terry Mack runs the length of the pitch to head that.
Well, remember, because it was cleared from a corner.
Yeah.
Like, so we were, you know, all in our own box. And you're right, we're already 6-0 up. You might think, yeah, probably got this one. But no, Terry Mack just zooms up there. And I talked to Kent, because Kenny then, I think, gave it to David Johnson, if I remember rightly. And I often talk to Alan Kennedy about this goal, who will talk about this goal forever, tries to insert himself into the conversation, but I'm not sure he was. But it is, I mean, you're exactly right. Who the hell in their right mind when they went in 6-0 towards the dying embers of the game still will sprint 80 yards to meet perfectly with his head? And again, Terry Mack would tell you, if he was here right now, not the most this is not John Toshack we're talking about, but hits that thing. And Highway put it on his head so well that all Terry had to do is get his head in the way of that. And unbelievable goal. And these were the days, I wasn't at the game, but these were the days where I lived. You get the Football Echo dropped at about 6 o'clock at night. Which was the pink. And again, you're all too young for this. But either had the Copite dancing or the Toffee Lady dancing. And I read, so none of us that night could wait for Match of the Day. Because we had won 7-0. Games obviously wasn't broadcast live. But the BBC, you know, would cover all the games and then edit it down for Match of the Day. And I can remember sitting at 9 o'clock thinking, I can't wait to see this game. 7-0 against Spurs.
Yeah,
and it was a period there where Spurs couldn't win at Anfield for like 30, 40 years. You go back and it was always something, and I want to say it was like post-World War One that they just hadn't won, and Anfield was their, and certainly that day was their bogey ground. But I always remember the Football Echo dropped. I read the story and I thought, I got to be in for, didn't go out that night. Got to be in for Match of the Day.
So you're about 22 at that point. So what are you doing in your life then?
I graduated from college. I'd come back. I was a PE teacher. So I'd moved back to North Wales. I went to college in Staffordshire at Madeley College of Physical Education. I got a job in Llangollen at Ysgol Dinas Brown as the PE teacher. So I was teaching physical education. And that back in North Wales, in Wrexham, where my parents had the pub, and so I was back there. This is when I started to, in the summers, go over to America and play and coach. But that particular year was also the year we won the European Cup, if you remember as well. So that year was a special year, and I had just graduated the year before and was in my first job. The bizarre thing, I always remember watching the game on crutches because I played. I started my first ever job, this is the embarrassment of my life, still is, on September 7th, 1977, and broke my leg on September 10th playing and had 16 weeks off. Worked 3 days, 16 weeks off as a PE teacher. So I remember watching that game on crutches with a broken leg. But yeah, I was teaching physical education.
There you go. And I mean, you mentioned there 77 being generally a glorious year for Liverpool. It was our first of a four European Cups in sort of quick succession, really. It just must have been a brilliant time to be a Liverpool fan.
Oh, it's phenomenal. I mean, you think, particularly that year, the 77 one, I still, you know, still marvel at Tommy Smith's header. You know, we still look at that and go, first of all, again, similar to Terry McDermott, Tommy Smith was not the one to be coming up for corners and winning, you know, scything headers at the near post. But that really cemented this concept we all have about ourselves now as European royalty. You know, you're on, that one was broadcast live. And that game, 3-1, Kevin Keegan in particular, ending Bertie Voigt's career. And if you recall, this was the last game Kevin was playing for us before he went to Hamburg, just turned inside out. Tommy Smith, Steve Highway. I mean, what a great performance that was. And whilst it was, the game was a little bit hanging in the balance for a little bit after that, you know, once Keegan put it away, I think penalty towards the end there was all over. And that really set us off, to your point, over the next, what was that, 7 years into four European Cups and cemented who we are today.
And I mean, we talked about Shankly a little bit earlier. Obviously, it's Paisley by now. For a man who didn't want the job, he did pretty well, didn't he? It's an amazing kind of, you know, obviously period in any football club's history one of the most decorated managers now in sort of world football, for a man who wasn't sure whether he was up for it.
Yeah. Well, you talk to players who were around, you know, talk to Rushy, talk to Kenny. Great stories about Bob. He didn't want the job. It was a big shock to all of us. When Bill resigns, it came out of nowhere. Mm. Kenny would tell you that completely different styles. I mean, imagine a shock to the system of the players. You've got somebody larger than life like Shanks, you know, dominating the dressing room, being out front with the media, building a bastion of invincibility. And then you get Bob, you know, part of the boot room ethic. So you had the same values that permeated through the club for decades, but a completely different guy. And what Kenny and Rushy would tell you to this day is that Bob was more perceptive, and he would see things, and he wouldn't say much in the dressing room, but have a quiet word with everybody, had some great one-liners to players. And with that kind of, you know, very withdrawn personality, and yet, he said, when you sat down with him one-on-one, phenomenal. And you know, most successful manager we've ever had. And from that perspective, I don't think anybody, it's tough for anybody, you think of anybody, to be able to deliver 20 trophies in 9 years, which he was able to do. And one of the more unassuming characters you'd ever meet, I guess. So, but yeah, it was Paisley. And that was Bob. And between him and Shanks, and of course, other managers, Kenny we've had, Rafa, the success we've had, and now Jurgen. That's an incredible banner we have on the cop to this day, right? And Gerard Houllier as well, you know, so.
You mentioned before you enjoyed sort of talking to the players who were your heroes back then about these sort of games. Do you also speak to people who maybe weren't around at the time who didn't know, so that might be sort of players, if you like, or people from the ownership group or sponsors? You know, do you often say, you know, well, you should have seen that performance back in 77, look it up on YouTube?
You don't want to sound old to everybody when I were a lad, but you do. You look at, you say, because my wife's a great example. America, and you've met my wife, you know, and it's, to her, it's Rushy, it's Barnsley, it's Kelly. She has no idea.
Just Peter's mates.
They're mates. They're lovely people. She knows their wives, I'll explain, you know, when she's there and she sees it, she'll walk with Kenny and Marina, Rushy and Carol, and see the adulation the players get. But to her, these are just great guys. Mm. It's still, for me, even in my role, a thrill to be in their company, knowing what they meant to me, to my dad, millions of fans around the world, and still to this day what they mean to this football club. So still get a little tingle when I'm with them all the time.
Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, and your third goal is, I mean, it's another one that's one of the most famous in Liverpool's history. It's the one that gets us back into the game at Istanbul. There's three to choose from there, but it's from the Istanbul final, 2005. Three to choose from, as you say, but you've gone for that first one. It's Steven Gerrard, who's obviously a club icon as well, to get us back into that game.
Yeah, it was interesting for me. At this point, my career, long time at that point in video games, and I was at Seattle working for Microsoft running the Xbox business. And so when we got to that final, which was a surprise to all of us when you think of the path we took and the team we had, I immediately looked online, and I'm in Seattle, Washington. I look at Istanbul, Turkey. There's no way I can get there without making three plane changes. So I resigned myself. All right, I am going to have the best time. So booked one of the bigger conference rooms on Microsoft campus. There was an English pub nearby. Invited 150 people into this conference room, ordered beer, pork pies, everything, decked it out in red and white. And everybody came in, and we had big screens. And of course, first half didn't quite go the way we expected it. So what happened was, a lot of people who were the kind of neutrals that were there for maybe the free beer and pork pies, I don't know, left. And, you know, it was halftime was a little downcast, to say the least. And so I think there was about 50 people left who were willing to stay with me, more to console me, I think, more than anything else. Because I think, as I was thinking, as we all were, I hope this is not 5 or 6 nil, right? When Crespo puts in that third goal, you're thinking, this could go and you look at their team. And I still look at their team today, right? Versus our team. No disrespect to the lads out on the pitch there, but we had no business coming back. We had no business getting to the final, right? But just something about this team. And you point to Stephen and his leadership. And so when Stephen's header goes in, I started to see a little bit of a buzz and people started knocking on the door of the conference room because I'd locked the door at this point and I wouldn't let them in. They wanted to come back and watch. To me, they had left. They'd abandoned us. The karma and the shift was changing. If I let them back in the room, that would not be conducive to what ultimately turned out to a victory. Stephen's header, Vladdy, obviously, the penalty, Zabi, you know, and then Jerzy Dudek and all of the histrionics in the end of and Shevchenko. I will never forget that night. And I was thousands of miles away, but I'd invested so much emotionally into the lead up and doing it. And when Stephen's header went in and that windmill of his arm as he's running back to the center spot, you felt then something could be on here. And then you watch the Milan players start to doubt themselves the same way we saw Barcelona more recently here in Anfield. And you could feel it. And you could feel the kind of red juggernaut starting to work. Vladdy's shot sneaks through. Penalty, Stephen will tell you this day, captain's penalty going in, goes down. The drama of the save and then the rebound, everything coming together. And then Dudek's save against Shevchenko, which to this day, every time I look at that, I said, I have no idea how he missed that. And then the final penalty that Shevchenko missed, right? That, and then the place goes nuts around the world. Yeah, I never forget that moment.
So, I mean, so on the night itself or the afternoon, I guess it kind of would have been in,
yeah,
in 12 Seattle.
Yeah, noon kickoff.
You know, you, as you say, you're in a room and some of them are Liverpool fans and others, you know, are there as, you know, football observers. You know, they, you must have seen, you know, you've got your own emotions, but there must have been kind of disbelief from other people, you know, who say, you know, this football team, you know, it's incredible what they've done. And wherever you go in the world, you know, people will still talk about the miracle of Istanbul. That's not just our phrase. That's that's what everyone in kind of football talks about.
You talk to all the way up to the higher, Infantino, you know, president of FIFA, Čeferin, president of UEFA, and I'll chat with him and I'll be sat with him and things. And you say Istanbul, their eyes light up, right? Because it was great for football. And people involved in football, teams we play against, Madrid just, but, you know, in 2.5 years here, I've pretty much met every president of every major club because we've been so successful in Europe. The conversation always gravitates to football, and you start talking about Istanbul, and you see people's eyes light up. Because I think two things there. What a great game for the neutrals. Mm. Unbelievable game for the neutrals. The only people who look at that with any disdain are AC Milan fans. Everybody else, you know, looks back at that. And it proves that if you apply yourself, that anything can happen. No matter how dire the circumstances in a football match, I got to believe people still think, well, Liverpool were 3-0 down against the best club team in the world at that time. And somehow they pulled it off. We can pull it off. So yeah. I think these moments in sports history, not just football history, but general sports history, you can point to. In America, it's always they point to the hockey gold medal against the Russians, right? The Soviets, where there's no way that this team should have won. But these are the games that outlive history almost, that people will always point to. That was Lake Placid in 1980, and they still talk about it to this day. People, my kids, my grandkids, my great-grandkids will pull out video of the 2005 Champions League final and point to it. They could do it. We can do it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that is one of those seminal moments, not just in this club's history, but you talk to UEFA folks, they'll still say best Champions League final ever. You know.
And I think it's a sort of symbol of what everything that we think is great about Liverpool as well, which is the togetherness, which is the anthem that we have. And I think, you know, we go over to America quite a lot now with the Anfield Wrap, and obviously, you know, partly with the tours that you do, but sometimes just kind of on our own. And it's funny because it shows that the spirit of the club, I think, in Istanbul, and we've seen it quite a few times recently. And you know, when we speak to American fans, you know, some of them are, you know, support Liverpool since, you know, 30, 50 years, but some of them have that moment where they just decided that the club was for them. And quite a few of them, it is Istanbul. And I think it's that there is something romantic about this football club, but it's all the things that other fans kind of tease us for, but that we kind of know is true, really, that there's something about this club that you think, that's something I want to get involved with, that's something I want to kind of...
the phrase we use, you know, is this means more.
Yeah.
And we get ridiculed by other clubs for that, but I stand by that. It does mean more. There is something about this football club as you travel the world. As I said, 2 weeks ago, I'm on holiday in Cape Town. Wherever I go in the world, I want to go spend time with the official Liverpool Supporters Club. And so sit down, make a presentation, do an hour and a half. I think you've been in one of them, maybe.
In Germany.
In Germany, yeah. We did that in Munich. And then take questions and just... They want to get closer to the club. And the further you are away, and I've lived through this geographically, the greater desire you will have to get closer. So when somebody like me shows up with a live bird on my chest, regardless of who I am, they lap it up. And I think the essence of what Liverpool is all about is incredibly different than any other football club. And I say that without any arrogance or pretentiousness, but there is something... The history we talked about, the players who have played for us, our achievements, the tragedy that follows the football club, the uniqueness of the city and the people of the city, the tough times we've been through and what football has meant to us throughout those times. And for me, that was reaffirmed when I had the unbelievable great fortune to be on the parade bus with the Champions League trophy. And again, bringing my wife into this, she was also on one of the back buses, and she said you could see the joy in these people's faces. She said, I'm looking down and grown men are crying, seeing Jürgen or whoever with the cup. And I said, they are looking at that. And when Liverpool Football Club is successful like we are, their lives are elevated as a result. So when that parade bus comes through, you know, they'll talk about that for decades. And she said, you could see it in their faces. And, you know, and then we came down, the Strand was something else. Ownership was on the bus and they were just loving it. And I think they thought when we came up Leeds Street, if you know what I mean, that it was all over, right?
And then we got the
no idea that as we turn left, coming down onto the Strand, onto the Dock Road, for those of us that would call it the Dock Road, there's another 250,000 people. Stunning moment I'll never forget. Moment I'll never forget.
And does that kind of, I mean, we're jumping ahead a little bit here, but does that kind of motivate you, or well, everyone even more, really, when you see, I mean, you know it, we all know it, but when you see in the faces that, as you say, the source of pride the Liverpool Football Club is for people and for when, you know, the city might be getting knocked or whatever, or when, as you say, people's personal circumstances might be tough, the fact that Liverpool do have the best team in the world, what that means to people, does that kind of, you know, as I say, motivate you even more to do a better job, I guess?
Absolutely. You owe it to the people who have given so much of their lives emotionally, financially, to the football club, paying for, you know, go through the turnstiles when you pushed a quid, you know, through the turnstile and got onto the cop, and all the way to the modern day. And they've invested their lives in the love of this football club. This city still goes through tough times. And if we as a football club can provide some hope, that the fact of the matter is that we have an obligation as a football club in this city to do the best we can for the people of this city. And the ability for us to do that over the past few years with the manager we got and the squad we've got has been unprecedented. And I can go back to 65 FA Cup final. But when I think of everything coming together right now in this perfect storm of who we are, who we were and who we will be, this is a magical moment for the club and for the city.
And back to 2005 then, and you're miles away. You must have been sort of, I mean, you're enjoying the moment, but a little bit kind of homesick, I guess, as well.
You know, it's a great point. And the following week, Time Magazine used to be huge, came out. And I still carry this around. And it was a full-page op-ed piece about a Liverpool fan in Hong Kong, the same night for him, about that night, in watching Istanbul, how it made him yearn for his city. He was a scouser that had an expat. Yearn for everything about his city. The lessons that football can teach you about resilience, never giving up, the leadership of Steven Gerrard, who not quite single-handedly, but when he scored that header and that run back, not jog back to the halfway line, and no real celebration. It's like the ball's in the back of the net. You know, we got two more to score. That was bigger than football. And, you know, and I'll send you this op-ed piece because you'll love reading this. And this is about the long-distance love affair. And again, the further you are away from this city, the more you fall in love with it all over again. Because you're not here with the shit weather and everything else that goes on. You just have this romanticized view of what this city now is, particularly in the last 10, 15 years. And what we've come through. And when you've come through adversity and you've come out the other side, that's better than never having adversity because you've learned life lessons. And what that did that day, that night in Istanbul, the miracle of Istanbul, as I said, was more than football for a lot of people, and certainly was for me.
I mean, so does your kind of life give you, I mean, we only have sort of our own experiences and you can't sort of live everyone's, but you've been the 5-year-old in Garston who's been taken by his dad and the thrill of that. And you've been the expat kind of, thousands of miles away who would love greater access, but you know, has a very important job to do. And I guess that makes you sort of fairly unique in a way that, you know, when we have the debates around, you know, tickets and access and things like that, you can sort of come at it, you know, more or less from every angle, really, and kind of understand all viewpoints. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, I mean, I've got massive empathy and sympathy and understanding. And, you know, I've seen football change over 61 years. you know, I'll be 65 the night of the Derby match at Goodison in 2 weeks. And so I've seen everything in black and white and colour. And so there's great sympathy, empathy. I've seen football evolve, you know, outside of Liverpool, just the global sport of football. And I like to think for the better because there's this pining for the old days. But let me tell you, if you went back to the old days as you are now, you go, how did you ever do this, right? The boys' pen is a great example. I was on the boys' pen 6 or 7 times, probably when I was 10 or 11 years of age. The first thing you did when you got in the boys' pen was try to get out. It was Lord of the Flies. There was dog-eat-dog in there. And the concept of it now, and I don't know if you know where it was in the far corner of the cop, top right as you look at it, and there was girders there. We were all scrambling to get out because it was mayhem in there. You know, and the idea of throwing in basically 10 to 15-year-olds all in there seemed like a good idea at the time, but boy, now. But football, yeah, do we still yearn for the working-class ethics and everything that was great about football? Of course, but like anything else, things move on. Safety is paramount. Enjoyment of the game. We have a magnificent stadium now that's only going to get better. You know, having been to the Wanda, which we had fond memories of in June, not some fond memories a couple of nights ago, there's something missing with modern stadiums. And, you know, I was chatting with my fellow executives, Atletico Madrid, delightful people, and Miguel Angel Gil, who's the CEO, been with the club, his family has owned the club for decades. He says, I can't wait to come back to Anfield. We have this magnificent stadium, he said, but there's something about Anfield that I can't wait. It's going to be a great game. And, you know, Spurs is the same. What an unbelievable stadium experience, but you miss White Hart Lane. You go to the London Stadium, you know, West Ham, but boy, Upton Park. So there's this constant conflict of modernization versus tradition. And I think we get it right at Anfield. It's still Anfield. Stadium's been there on that footprint for 120 odd years. And yet it's a comfortable experience. We take great pride in the club of Visit Football Awards 4 years in a row. What we instill in all of our staff, give them a Liverpool welcome. The moment they get out their car, they're walking up Walton Breck Road, they're coming the other way from Skerries, wherever they're coming from, greet them. When they leave, say, you know, enjoy the game, safe journey home. But there's a scouseness that we still have that our staff, and it's recognised by the Premier League and visitors from all over the world as one of the best stadiums to visit because you're getting that Liverpoolianness there. And I think the stadium experience is spectacular, and I've been in most of the great stadiums now in the last 2.5 years here, and in my previous years as a fan, you know, there's nothing like Anfield.
Yeah, it's funny because I was speaking to a journalist out in Spain. It was Sid Lowe who was talking to. He was obviously English, but lives out there now, and he says he's never spoken to anyone who's been to Anfield and came back and went, do you know what? I don't know what all the fuss is about. Yeah, well, like, it doesn't happen, does it? Like, yeah. If anything, people come back and go, it was even better.
Well, you know, and the wonder, magnificent, we are, like I say, with fond memories, but I went to the Calderon, the Vicente Calderon. Yeah. When I was at Reebok, I did a deal with Atletico Madrid, actually with Miguel's father, and in the late 90s. What a stadium. The Calderon Cauldron is what it was. And so I think you just lose something. You know, thank goodness John Henry walks into Anfield, looks around and says, why would we ever want to leave here? And so we embarked upon, you know, the modernization and the refurbishment, but the footprint's still there. The cop's still there. Anfield Road's still there. The Kemlin Road is now the Sir Kenny, but, you know, it's still Anfield. And that's one of those seminal moments where a decision was made that I think has given us the platform for success.
Do you watch football differently now? I'm interested because I was convinced you were going to pick a goal from sort of the last 6 months or so, so even sort of Barcelona or Madrid, and when you didn't, I sort of was wondering, like, so when you watched, you know, the fourth goal, for example, go in, you know, corner taken quickly, Luigi go in now, are you sort of having to be sort of Peter Moore, the CEO, who's thinking about, well, how are we going to get all these people out to Madrid, or are you still that sort of five-year-old boy who's jumping up because Liverpool have still scored a goal?
There's a little bit of that. You I'm still the euphoric. People always ask, do you jump up and scream in the director's box? I always think there's a protocol. Your team scores, the away team does it. Stand up, applaud. You know, we generally don't sing in the director's box, but I'll sing You Never Walk Alone if you ever, God forbid, the cameras come on me when I'm singing and hear me. But, you know, I believe that the CEO should sing You Never Walk Alone, and we do that. There's a certain protocol. But yeah, there's things like I think about, firstly, as a fan when I'm watching the game, 90 minutes, do not talk to me, first of all. My wife knows that. Just leave me alone. Let me focus. Nobody talks to me when the game is on. I just need to follow every kick. The fan in me, when the game is on, is there first. It's only when you go into the office maybe the next day, the whatever repercussions are, stadium operation reports, you see, you know, what the unbelievable stewarding staff, you know, have to go through to make sure it's a safe, secure, enjoyable experience. You go through the reports. You think about the next opponent coming in. Ticketing, obviously, always a hard issue. And then when you go to Europe, there is a process. You have a protocol lunch with the opposing team. You make a speech. You exchange gifts, as we did in Madrid. You then are the guest of UEFA and what have you. So there's a process now that I'm, to my delight, very familiar with, because I don't know, it's probably 20-odd games I've been to now, whether it's away at PSG or Barcelona, obviously Atletico, Roma, Napoli a couple of times. You know, it's just these are phenomenal experiences where you see what other football clubs look like, feel like, operate like. And you compare them to yourself and you feel really good about what Liverpool Football Club does. And I can tell you, John, whenever anybody comes for the Champions League return leg or for the first leg at Anfield, it's a first-class experience. And they remark upon the fact it's a first-class experience.
It's funny because all three goals you've mentioned, none of them you're actually kind of in the stadium for. And I think that's an interesting thing in that I look at, you know, Liverpool did a really brilliant job after, I think it was for Madrid, where they showed all around the world where people were watching the finals.
Yeah.
And some of them shocked you. Like, I didn't realise we had that many fans.
Oh, yeah.
Never mind that they were so passionate. And I think something that Liverpool does, and Liverpool fans do brilliantly, and they do it on their own. And I know there's official supporters clubs and you guys support them, but largely these supporters clubs are run by individual people who create these amazing experiences for themselves and for others. And, you know, it's amazing to see, isn't it?
It's phenomenal when you go, and again, most recently Cape Town, you talk to somebody. A gentleman came up to me, he was there, probably in his late 70s, said, I followed Liverpool since the 65 FA Cup final. I've never been to Liverpool. But I can tell you every team, every kick, every player, and I live and die for this football club, but I've never had the money to go to Liverpool. And so you hear those stories all around the world. We have over 300 official Liverpool supporters clubs, and there's probably as many, again, that are unofficial to your point. Dedicated individuals who maybe their love of Liverpool has been passed down from their dad in the 60s and 70s that have taken up the mantle. United States is a great example. You know, we've got multiple clubs now in cities where just one club isn't big enough because of the geographical size of a city. So the South Side's got a Liverpool supporters club. The North Side's got a Liverpool supporters club. And as I said, I make it my business because I owe it to them. Wherever I go, whether I'm on holiday or they're, you know, attending a game or attending a conference or something, to go seek them out and, you know, make a presentation and then take questions. And there's only certain stuff I can answer. But I think they appreciate the fact the CEO will come.
Yeah.
It's always a good night, a few beers. It's always some dive bar somewhere. You know? And but you know, you'll recall when I first got here, I coined this phrase, local heart, global pulse. And it sounds marketing to a lot of people, but that's exactly what we are. And one of the things that when you talk to these people thousands of miles away, they not only have a love for the club, they also have a love for the city and everything. The two are inextricably intertwined. And so you talk to them and they'll tell you about the city and they'll tell you about the waterfront and European capital of culture and the history of the city. And many of them, of course, have made pilgrimages here and have attended games. And what we do is we've done a lot of research and we did an economic impact report on what the club means to the city. And it's substantial, nearly £500 million a year come into this city via Liverpool Football Club with hotels and transportation. But we found that people came for the football and then came back for the city.
Absolutely.
They'd come for a game and they go, this is not what I thought it was. And bring their wife, bring their girlfriend, bring whoever back for a long weekend in Liverpool. And I think that we take our role as a football club as the ambassadors for the city. Seriously, you know as well as I do. You jump in a cab and somebody says, where are you from? And you say Liverpool.
Yeah.
The conversation immediately goes to football.
Yeah.
Immediate. Used to be the Beatles. Yeah. but now it's football. And we take that responsibility seriously as a football club because we know we're not only ambassadors for football, but for the city itself.
Yeah, and we feel the same with the Anfield Wrap, but we promote Liverpool as much as we can. You know, we say we're lovers of Liverpool in every sense, and I think that is an important thing for all of us. Just to sort of finish off, I'm interested in, you know, to round up in terms of so for the FA Cup final, you were a 10-year-old boy who's too young to kind of travel down, and then for Teddy Mac 77, you're 22, just starting your career somewhere else. So then, obviously, by AC Milan, Istanbul, you're a guy who's about 50 and, you know, you're very successful, but that with it becomes an issue within that you can't just jump on a flight to go to Liverpool whenever you want. So now that you get to sit there in pretty much the best seats of the house and watch this amazing Liverpool team every week, you know, I'm sure you're proud of lots of things that you've done and enjoyed different parts of your life. But I mean, that must be a thrill that you can just drive up and watch this fantastic side.
You pinch yourself and what we try to do, going back to my original point, is our boardroom experience. We welcome everybody in a unique way. And you talk to the, you know, West Ham on Monday, whoever it is, Madrid down the road. I've become great friends with the chairman and chief executives of major clubs. Nasser Al-Khelaifa at PSG will tell me, and I see him regularly because I'm on the ECA board, love coming to Anfield. Josep Maria Bartomeu will jokingly say to me, you broke us, Barcelona. And we had a great time together, and he's become a good friend as well. And I have great respect for what he does for that football club. Karl-Heinz Rummenigge and Uli Hoeneß at Bayern Munich, just absolute gentlemen. They came here last year and got their draw, and you know, they thought, you know, that they were in the driver's seat. But I remember Karl-Heinz saying to me as we're walking out from those seats, he says, this isn't over yet. And he remembers because last time we played them, the same thing happened. I think Ray Kennedy scored a late winner in Munich and knocked them out. So they love the warmth of the people of this city. And my job is to reflect that in my role. But yeah, I sit in my seat. I pinch myself. I look around. I stand up. I sing You Never Walk Alone. Only when the ball's kicked off do I sit down. To my left is Kenny Dalglish. Behind me is Rushy. I mean, you do. These are pinch me moments.
It's not bad.
And I've never seen us lose in the league at Anfield since I've been here. Probably shouldn't have said that out loud, but since I arrived, we've never lost a league game.
It's fantastic.
At Anfield, yeah. My wife thinks just that's just the way it is. Trust me, it's not.
Yeah, she should have been there in the early 90s.
Should have been there a while back.
Peter, huge thanks for coming in to speak to us. We do appreciate how open you are. We appreciate your friendship. And yeah, it's very much glad of you coming down.
Absolutely, my pleasure. It's almost cathartic for me to be able to talk like this and not talk about the business of football. It's great. Sports Social Podcast Network.